You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goertz.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, here on the Thursday edition of the show. On the line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. Hope you're all doing well on this Thursday afternoon. It's been sunny, been cloudy. I know it's another hot one. The heat index is something like 105, but it seems to be partly sunny, partly cloudy, so maybe it's not too bad if you're outside. Again, drink water, stay cool, stay safe, stay hydrated, check your cars, all that good stuff. Hope you're doing well on this Thursday afternoon here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. Phone lines are open. We got a lot to talk about today. 334-321-1390. That's the number to put you through to me. 334-321-1390. Anything on your mind in the sports world, anything I'm talking about that you want to chime in on, if you want to be a part of the show, give me a call. I'd love to hear from you. Phone lines are open. We got a busy day today. We have some news that came out about, 45 minutes ago or so. We'll break it down. We'll talk about how real it is and what the next steps are if this is to be true. So we're going to talk about that. At 2:30, we're going to have Lindsey Crosby, host of Locked On MLB Prospects and an Auburn baseball writer for Auburn Daily. Here in the studio, we're going to be talking about some Auburn baseball players who are still playing some baseball at a different level. We're going to talk about those guys. We'll get some MLB updates. We'll talk about the Atlanta Braves. Lots of good stuff to talk about with Lindsey Crosby at 2:30. And then in hour number two at 3:30, we will talk to Chris Gordy, host of Locked On SEC, in his usual Thursday 3:30 slot. So we will talk to him as well. This will be my second show of the day, in case you are unaware. I don't think I mentioned it yesterday on the show. This morning, tomorrow morning, and Monday morning on News Talk WANI 98.7 here in Auburn, I am hosting Auburn Opelika this morning, the Abby-winning Auburn Opelika this morning. Ben Taylor, who is the host of that show, is out of town. He is going on a little vacation, so I hosted it this morning. I'll be hosting it tomorrow morning and on Monday morning, and it's from 6 to 9 on News Talk WANI 98.7 here in Auburn Opelika, and let me tell you, when that alarm clock ran at 5 a.m. this morning, I was not a happy camper. I was almost confused. I said, wait a minute, what is that noise? Why is it going off so early? But I got up, I did it, it all went well. I'm excited. I get to do it again tomorrow and on Monday. So if you don't get enough of me here on the line, tune in 6 to 9 on News Talk WANI 98.7 for Auburn Opelika this morning, tomorrow, and on Monday. But we got a lot of sports to talk about. Let's get into it here on the Thursday edition of On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. Before we get into it, the countdown remains and continues 58 days away from Auburn football. That's right, 58 days away until September 3rd when Auburn will kick off this 2022 college football season. Countdown to 50 is on, folks. I'm telling you, once it hits 50, it's going to go by in the blink of an eye. And to kick off the show today, there is some news coming out of the college football world, college athletics world, and it's only coming from one source. So take this for what it is and take it maybe with a grain of salt and kind of maybe be a little weary about it. We're going to talk about that. But earlier today, Braden Keith, who is the... Well, it just refreshed on me. I had his title pulled up. He is the co-founder and editor-in-chief of the Swim Swam news website. And look, I'll be honest, I've never heard of it, but he is a verified account on Twitter. And he tweeted out, source, North Carolina, Florida State, Clemson, and Virginia are all negotiating to join the SEC. ESPN is trying to void their TV deal with the ACC. He tweeted that out about 45 minutes to an hour ago Oh, never mind. He tweeted it out this morning. I'm just now seeing it. Okay. He tweeted out, North Carolina, Florida State, Clemson, and Virginia are all trying to negotiate their way to the SEC. Now, there's a lot to unpack here, right? Is this legit? I don't know. I'm sure that they are at least considering moving to the SEC, and I'm sure that the SEC has heard those phone calls. And I'm sure that those are conversations that are being had as we speak. Now, are those four teams the specific ones, and are they legitimately at this very moment trying to get to the SEC? I don't really know, and I don't think we really know, because that's the only person that I've seen talk about it. But he tweeted it out. They've got an article on their website. You can go and read it. It's Swim News, okay? Again, I've never heard of it, but here we are. They have an article. They tweeted it out. They felt confident in it. They didn't give up their source, I don't think. So, again, take that for what you will. But is it legit? Maybe. I mean, it's at least something. They have been told something that nobody else has, which, again, I don't know how legit that is. But let's talk about it like it is, okay? I know that it can or can't be, or it may or may not be, but let's talk about it like it is. It's not confirmed. It's not finalized. Pen has not been put to paper yet. Nothing like that has happened. And so until that point, you cannot fully say that this is happening. But there are people reporting about it, that Clemson, Florida State, North Carolina, and Virginia are trying to negotiate their way into the SEC. There's people reporting and talking about it. And so I want to kind of build on that a little bit. But remember, until pen to paper has happened, this is not 100% a true done deal. Remember with UCLA and USC, we didn't find out about that until the day that it happened, the day that it was signed and approved and everything happened all in about a three-hour span. We didn't find out about it until that day for a reason. So, will this happen? Maybe, maybe not. But we're going to talk about it in case it does, because I think it's interesting. We've talked about Clemson and Florida State. Those are the two very popular schools that the SEC has been talked about taking from the ACC, Clemson and Florida State. I think those are the two obvious ones. I talked about that yesterday here on the show. I think Clemson and Florida State would make sense. I think geographically it would make sense. I wanted Clemson and Florida State to come to the SEC a while ago. I just think it makes total sense. In history and in recent history, between Clemson and Florida State, they're two college football powerhouses. They're two brand names. People know who they are. People respect who they are. And people watch Clemson and Florida State when they're on TV. All of this is about TV money. And if you think otherwise, you're wrong. This is about television money and how each school and each conference can bring in the most dough. Clemson and Florida State will do that for whatever conference they're in. And right now, they're in the ACC, and they're not making anything. Their TV deal is horrible. The ACC got gypped, and the ACC schools are not making anything from it. Very, very little. If you come to the SEC, you make a lot of money. If you go to the Big Ten, you make even more money. But I think it makes sense for the SEC to go after Clemson and Florida State and for Clemson and Florida State to be interested in the SEC. But then you start talking about North Carolina and Virginia and you start asking why these teams, right? I just talked about Clemson and Florida State. That makes sense. But when you start talking about Virginia and North Carolina, why those two schools? Well, I think there's a couple ways to look at this. It's not just football. I've been preaching that, right? Look at this from the basketball perspective. You bring in Virginia and North Carolina, two teams that have won national championships in the last few years. Teams that compete in the NCAA tournament and make it to the Final Four and play in national championship games and win national championship games. You look at Virginia and North Carolina on the basketball side, that's genius. It is a genius move if the SEC were able to grab those two schools. Football, not so much. But basketball, absolutely. But then you look at Clemson and Florida State for basketball, you're like, eh, nothing crazy, right? Clemson, for sure. Florida State, here and there. But then you ask yourself, if you're looking at it from the basketball side, why not go after Duke? If you're going after the big ACC schools in basketball, why would you not go after Duke? And honestly, I don't know. Because other than basketball, Duke's not going to make you any money. Nobody's watching Duke football, I promise you. Duke fans, maybe. And that's a big maybe. Nobody else in the SEC on Saturday is going to say, oh, Duke plays today? Oh, I got to make sure I'm in front of the TV to watch that. But on the basketball side of things, when Duke is on, people watch it. That's what Duke would do if they were to be in the SEC. I just don't think it fits. And it's still North Carolina and Virginia would still be weird. But I think they could make it work. Because they have enough football success to at least be competitive. For Duke, though, I just don't see how they can make that happen. And so, if this is legit, that Florida State, Clemson, Virginia, and North Carolina are trying to get to the SEC, I think it makes sense all the way around. I think Virginia fits on the basketball side of things, maybe not so much on football. I think North Carolina, they fit in basketball and have become relevant in football. You talk about Clemson, they do enough in football to make up them being bad in basketball. And Florida State, no, they're not there right now in football, but they will be back. And their basketball program has been decent, right? It's been decent. A couple of years ago, they had a really good team. I believe they made it to the Elite Eight. And so when you look at those four teams, yeah, it's kind of weird, and yeah, it's going to be different, but I think it would work in the SEC. But will this actually happen? Will these four teams specifically, Clemson, Florida State, North Carolina, and Virginia, will this happen for them to come to the SEC? Maybe. And here's what I mean by that. Something is going to happen. I think that is inevitable at this point. Now, I have talked to people that don't necessarily agree. I have talked to people that think maybe the SEC doesn't want to try to get other teams right now. Maybe they're okay with the 16 that they're going to have once Texas and Oklahoma get here, which I think will happen in 2024, not 2025. Maybe the SEC doesn't go after any other schools. Maybe they decide, we're okay. We're good enough as it is. We can still beat anybody and everybody at any other sport with the teams that we have right now. I don't see that being the case. I think eventually the Southeastern Conference, just like the Big Ten and other conferences, they will go after more schools if it makes financial sense. Clemson and Florida State makes financial sense. And this morning on Auburn Opelika this morning, we actually had Bill Cameron, host of The Drive, on. And during the sports segment of Auburn Opelika this morning, and I asked him about it. And he said that there would be a huge uproar from the University of Florida if Florida State shows up in the SEC. And I think he's right. Florida would have an absolute fit if Florida State joined the conference for tons of reasons. Because Florida, when they recruit against Florida State, that's the one thing they can say. We're in the SEC and they're not. That's what Florida can say over Florida State. Maybe say you're a better program overall right now. I wouldn't put it by much. But they can say we wear the patch that says SEC on our shoulders, where Florida State says the ACC. You can pitch that to a recruit. You can tell kids and their families, come play in the best conference with the best players and the best coaches. But if Florida State comes in, Florida no longer has that recruiting pitch anymore. And that will make that state even more competitive. So you're absolutely right, Bill. Florida will have an uproar if Florida State were to join the SEC. But they don't care. The Southeastern Conference can make a lot of money on Florida State. They can make a lot of money on Clemson. You don't think South Carolina is going to be upset if Clemson comes to the SEC? You don't think Alabama and Georgia are going to be upset if Clemson comes to the SEC? Not only do you have to recruit against them, now you got to play against them. But will they embrace the challenge? Will the schools rise up and say, yeah, let's bring in even more competition and even better teams than some that we have right now, and let's rock and roll and do this thing? We'll find out. So will this actually happen? Yes, to an extent. Do I think it'll be these four teams? Honestly, I don't know. And I'll tell you that. I'll tell you if I don't know. And I don't know. Would it make sense for these four teams? Yeah, I think you could make the argument. I think you can make the argument that across most sports, those four teams, Clemson, Florida State, North Carolina, and Virginia, on the money side, it would make sense. Because again, that's what this is all about. It's not about what looks good. It's not about what would make geographical sense. Look at the Big Ten with UCLA and USC. It's not about what the fans want. It's not about what the schools in the conference want. It's about what will make the most money for the conference and then for the schools. That's what college sports have become. It's no longer about the athletes. It's no longer about being a college football player. It's about how can we make more money. And that's not just college football, folks. That's the world. That's the world we live in. How can I make more money with someone else? If somebody else can make me more money than you are making me, sorry, you're out. That's how the world works. And that's how this whole conference realignment thing got started. And that's how it will continue to go. So will this happen? Maybe. We're going to have to wait and find out. And so let's say that Florida State, Clemson, North Carolina, and Virginia do end up signing and transferring and coming over to the SEC. What would that reaction be like? How would the schools and the teams and the fans and the coaches and the administrators in the SEC right now, how would they react if those four teams from the ACC joined the SEC? We'll talk about that on the other side of this break. Hey, we're off and running here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. What do you think about all this? I'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. We're going to talk about that and the question of the day on the other side of this break. Stay tuned. You're listening to the Thursday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Back here on the Thursday edition of On the Line, Jacob Goins with you on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Continuing on with the conversation of this possibility of North Carolina, Florida State, Clemson, and Virginia coming to the SEC. They're trying to negotiate it. According to a source, Braden Keith from SwimSwamNews.com. Again, it came out earlier today. Hasn't been confirmed. Nothing has actually happened. But we're talking about it if it does. And question of the day for you. It's kind of related to this. And so I'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. Will Auburn football benefit or struggle? Of course, we like to relate this to Auburn the best that we can. Will Auburn benefit or struggle if and when more teams are added to the SEC, whether it's these four teams, four other teams, whoever it may be, will Auburn struggle or will they benefit from more teams joining the SEC? Let me know. Give me a call, 334-321-1390. And I had asked the question before we went to the break, what will the reaction be if these four teams are to join the SEC? Of course, talking about North Carolina, Florida State, Clemson, and Virginia. And what would that reaction be like of the current programs, coaches, players, administrators in the SEC right now? Well, I can tell you what, if Clemson and Florida State walk into the SEC, there's going to be some really unhappy campers. That's exactly what's going to happen is schools like Alabama and Georgia, who run the SEC right now on the field and off the field in recruiting, they are going to be very upset and not necessarily shaking in their boots, but they're definitely going to have an uphill battle and they're going to be worried because now they have more teams to compete with. And now, as I talked about with Florida and Florida State, it's the same thing. Clemson would then be able to say, yeah, look at what we've done in the past. Plus, look at this new little patch we have on our jersey that says Southeastern Conference. They can now use that to their advantage. Same thing for Florida State on the football side. And then you look on basketball. Programs like Auburn and Alabama and Kentucky and Tennessee and Arkansas that have become really good in basketball, now you would have to play Virginia and North Carolina just about every single year. Those schools aren't going to be happy. I'll be honest. It would be cool to play North Carolina every year in basketball. Doesn't necessarily mean I want to, because that's a tough game. And then playing Virginia, that's another tough game. And it's not that we are scared or worried about playing tough games, but look, Auburn plays in the SEC across all sports, obviously, but they have some of the toughest schedules in every sport, especially football. And you add Clemson and Florida State to that on the football side, you want to talk about a schedule becoming even harder, add Clemson and Florida State to it. Auburn has the hardest schedule in the country this year. Then think about having to go and play Clemson on top of that. Think about having to travel to play Florida State on top of that. Or having to play North Carolina, who can put up 50 points at some times. A lot of teams are going to be upset. They'll deal with it because they don't have any other choice. But they will be upset about it because it's more competition, which means it's harder to win more games. And you're going to play more games. You're going to have to. If they add teams to the conference, more games are going to happen across all sports to make it work. Because if you don't, you're going to be right back in the same situation you're in right now. Whereas in football, you play a cross-division rival once every 7 years. That kind of defeats the purpose if you add a bunch of more teams and you don't create more games. And so now it will be harder to get those wins. It will be harder to get more wins. And then getting to the postseason, it'll be even harder to do that. And think about the SEC as it stands right now. They can get one or two teams in every year in the current playoff format. I think that will eventually change, especially with everything shifting as it is right now. But think about how the SEC is already dominating that. They're probably going to keep dominating that. Think about if Clemson and Florida State come. Clemson is a school and a program that competes for national championships just about year in and year out. And so what will that playoff system look like? That's a whole other conversation. That's a whole other conversation that we will have down the road. But just think about that. It's already tough to win the SEC championship as you have to play Alabama or Georgia every year in that championship game. And then add Clemson and Florida State to the mix. And not to disrespect North Carolina and Virginia, but on the football side of things, I don't see them being super, super competitive year in and year out. Basketball, that's a whole different story. Think about the SEC tournament. You have to play North Carolina in the second round. You have to play Virginia opening night of the SEC tournament, opening day of the SEC tournament. That's brutal. And then turn around and have to play somebody like Tennessee or Arkansas or Kentucky. That's brutal. That's absolutely brutal. So what will the reaction be of teams like this joining or other teams joining? They're not going to be happy, but they just got to deal with it because the SEC is doing what they need to do to stay competitive and make the most money. And will it work? Yeah, they'll figure out a way to make it work. They'll format it. They'll add games. They'll do what they have to do to make sure that it works out. Will it be weird? Absolutely. Will it take some getting used to? You bet. It's going to look weird, whether it's Clemson, Florida State, or whether it's some other teams. It's going to take a minute to get used to Oklahoma and Texas being in the SEC. That's going to be weird in itself. Then you start adding more teams, if that's the route that the SEC decides to go. But then ultimately, how is Auburn impacted by all of this? We sort of talked about it just then. Auburn's going to be, it's going to be tough for Auburn across all sports. You think their schedules are tough now. You think it's tough sledding and tough roads for Auburn athletics right now. Just think about when other schools start joining, schools that are just as good, if not better, than you. It's going to get even tougher. And so if you want to look at this from the Auburn football side, you better figure out your program and figure it out right now because it's not getting any easier with the next couple of seasons. And I understand you can look at it from the individual program of Auburn saying, yeah, you got to get better, and then look at it where, yeah, you have to play all these other schools and you have to play new schools that are, like I said, just as good, if not better than you right now. But those go hand in hand. You get better by winning games. And if you can't win games right now with the conference as it is, it's not going to get easier when they add more teams. It's going to get harder. And so looking at it from football, you better figure it out and figure it out fast. For basketball, you have a program that's on the rise that I think is on the verge of making Final Fours and winning national championships. That's about to get even tougher. If the SEC adds more schools, that makes it that much tougher. You have to win more games. You have to win bigger games, tougher games in conference play, plus SEC tournament, Not to mention if you see him in the NCAA tournament, if that's even a thing in the years to come. It's all going to change. But for Auburn, it's going to get tough. And you think it's hard now. Wait till more teams show up. It's going to be brutal if Auburn can't figure it out, which I think they will. But it doesn't get any easier here in the Southeastern Conference. Halfway through hour number one, stay tuned. We'll have Lindsey Crosby after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goertz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
Halfway through hour number one here on the Thursday edition of On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. Hope you're doing well on this Thursday afternoon. We have Lindsey Crosby in studio, host of Locked On MLB Prospects and Auburn baseball writer for Auburn Daily. Lindsey, good to have you back in the studio. Lots to talk about today. Let's jump into it. The Auburn baseball season is over, but Auburn players are still playing. Some of them are still doing some pretty big things on the pitching mound. A couple of Auburn pitchers have been doing some postseason play in some other leagues and make a name for themselves. What can you tell us?
So Joseph Gonzalez is the big one that I'm thinking about here. You know, pitching for the USA national team, he actually has made the collegiate national team roster. So they'll be doing competition going on. I actually believe they're in the Netherlands right now, so they're doing some stuff over the summer. And then I'm excited. Part of me wonders, is there going to be a college component for the World Baseball Classic? They announced today that's coming back next year, next spring. Obviously, it kind of feels like timing-wise it wouldn't work out that well if it's in the spring. But, yeah, Joseph Gonzalez definitely impressing, playing with a lot of future pros. I think the game he pitched last week, he had a first-round pick for next year, Enrique Bradfield from Vanderbilt, playing center field behind him. And so playing with the best of the best, and has to make Auburn feel good about at least having that ace going into next season.
And there's no doubt he can – I mean, he can just flat-out play. I mean, he was Auburn's most consistent pitcher all season long. He's off doing things with Team USA. Like, this guy's got his stuff, and I assume he will do big things in his career.
Yeah, and the thing that I've noticed about Joseph Gonzalez, and he got better about it during the season, is he doesn't just strictly stick to that classic sinkerballer profile where he's doing nothing but inducing weak contact. He's able to elevate the four seam a bit, use some breaking pitches, and get strikeouts as well. And so if that's truly an element that he's added to his game, whereas if you look back when he pitched in 2021, a lot of what he did was, again, just relying on that ground ball contact. And there were games this year where that was the case. But if he's added that strikeout element to his game, he has the potential to be one of probably, I'd say, one of the 10 best pitchers in college baseball next year. I know that sounds like it's a lot of hyperbole for just having finished a season, but he was arguably Auburn's most consistent starter, most reliable starter. There's a reason they went to him on for just about game one in the postseason there in Omaha, and I definitely am excited to watch what he does in what has to be his final year at Auburn next year.
No doubt. It's exciting to see Auburn players continuing to play in these different leagues and doing different things outside of the Auburn baseball season, but college baseball is over, but as you were telling me during the break, it is a busy time for you as you are the host of Locked On MLB Prospects. So much going on with baseball players, all the prospects with different, you know, the draft coming up and all different types of things going on. What are you into right now, man?
So a lot of stuff going on when it comes to the show. The MLB draft is on Sunday the 17th, is rounds 1 and 2. So obviously preparing to go live at the end of the draft and kind of recap the first couple days. Hopefully we get to hear an Auburn name called in one of those first two rounds. I'm not holding my breath on it. But
I was about to say, are you expecting that?
At the moment, I'm not. It would be nice, but I don't, as of now, think it's going to happen. There's an outside chance that a team wants to save some money and go after a guy like Sonny. And I do expect Blake Burkhalter to be a higher round pick, but not in day one. But the day before that, the 16th on Saturday, is the Futures game. It's the minor league All-Star game. They announced the rosters today. So whether it's doing that, it's talking about the draft. And then for Auburn Daily, I've got the MLB draft scouting reports coming out just about every other day with another player who's draft eligible. I've worked with some MLB scouts and some independent scouts who have given me some of their notes and their thoughts on our players, as well as my own grades and observations. So lots of stuff going on right now. you get through the draft, you've got 2 weeks until the trade deadline, so just a lot of talk, and then from there, that's when you really start to see prospects coming up for teams that are out of it by the trade deadline. They start calling up some of the players. Auburn's got quite a few guys that are, you know, double A, triple A that could see some time, and so just very excited for this stretch run of the baseball season here.
Well, the guys for Auburn that have potential to be drafted, we'll talk about them, and then we'll talk about some of those prospects that may have a chance to see some big league time in the coming weeks and months. Who are the guys that could be drafted in the next couple of weeks in the MLB draft from Auburn? And, you know, if you have a prediction of where, you know, they're going to be drafted, great. If not, just tell us why they should be drafted.
Yeah, so the two obvious guys, first baseman Sonny DeShera, obviously, you know, did great things, led the entire country in walks and on-base percentage, and one of the most prolific home run hitters. I expect him, the things that are working against him, and you have to understand the MLB draft is not strictly a talent draft like NFL is or like the NBA
is. It's very different.
It's very different because you have both high school and professional or high school and college players. College players can enter before their college eligibility is over. So there's a big component is money. A big component is how much does it take to buy this prep player out of his college commitment? Does this college player have leverage to go back for another year or not? Sonny, being a senior, being a little bit of an older guy, not going to have a ton of leverage. To me, he's probably a early to mid day two pick and somebody that he's probably going to get an underslot financial offer because he doesn't have a ton of leverage. He could come back to Auburn for a super senior year, but there's nothing he can do to raise his draft stock past what he did. So a guy talent-wise would probably be a third or fourth rounder, but draft-wise, it's probably going to be a little bit behind that. Reliever Blake Burkhalter is a guy that I honestly think could surprise some people with where he goes. He has the frame where I think if he wanted to start, he could work on that, but I have him profiled as a reliever at the next level. Great velo. He hit 98 on the four seam. He's got the cutter. He's got the two seamer, changeup, lots of pitches, little bit of effort in his delivery. So it's kind of a reliever risk, but Blake Burkhalter is a guy that is probably going to get picked somewhere late to the end of day two. But I think if there's anybody who's going to jump up and surprise us, it's going to be him. And then looking at some of the starting pitchers, Trace Bright, Mason Barnett, both should be selected. Bright's the bigger name for Auburn fans because you've seen more out of him. He was the only Auburn starting pitcher to pitch every weekend for Auburn this year. But I expect Barnett to be the bigger get by MLB teams. He has a lot of the raw tools. And the issue that we saw this season was some of the consistency. He was a little bit inefficient at times. And then he couldn't always land pitches for strikes. But a lot of that comes down to mechanical tweaks and working on the delivery and repetition. So I expect Barnett probably to be a day two, Trace Bright to be a day three. And then a guy that I think could surprise a lot of us that we haven't heard a lot of draft buzz about, left-hand pitcher Carson Skipper. So Skipper started his freshman year at Auburn, has moved to a relief role, been very good in it, still has come out and started. He started game one of the SEC tournament for Auburn. A guy that can throw strikes, has a couple different pitches, and has the right mentality as well as the stamina to go deep into a game. So Carson Skipper's a guy, probably going to be a day three guy, but someone who I think is going to make an organization very happy. And is when we look back at this draft in a couple years, I predict we'll say he was probably underdrafted, should have been higher than he was actually taken. And then just a lot of question marks behind some of the seniors on this team, a Brody Moore, a Cason Howell, a Blake Rambush, whether or not they'll get selected, whether they'll sign as free agents or not, and then a few of them have options to come back, and I'm really curious to see how that shakes out.
We've got Lindsey Crosby, host of Locked On MLB Prospects, here in the studio. It's interesting with the MLB draft because it is so different, and when players get drafted in the MLB draft, they don't necessarily just go to that team that they were drafted to. There's a whole process. Sometimes they go back to school and they were drafted. Sometimes, or a lot of times rather, they go to the minor leagues and they have to work their way up. How is the MLB draft different than any other professional draft?
Yeah, so, and you touch on it there. One of them is just the lag that it takes to get to MLB. Just about every single college draftee is going to take multiple years to go from the draft to MLB. They have to go through the minor leagues. It's very seldomly that you find a guy that gets called up in the same year. Atlanta had a guy last year. They drafted Spencer Strider. in the fourth round. He made it for, I want to say, one or two appearances at the end of the year last year, and now he's a starter in Atlanta. But most of your college draftees, you're looking at least one to two. The Angels took 19 college pitchers last year, and one of them has reached the majors, the majors, Chase Silseth. All the rest of them are still in the minors. And so, and then prep guys are usually a time frame of 4 to 5 years. And you combine the money with the fact that it takes so long to get there. Drafting in the MLB drafts about, really, you can't draft for need. You can't say, hey, we need a new shortstop. Let's go to the draft and get one. It's really a, organizationally, where are the weaknesses in our entire farm system? And then who's the best player available on the board and who's signable? You'll see guys that would have been first-round talents that don't necessarily get drafted at all because they've said, I don't care, I am going to college. You see guys who, Gunnar Henderson, committed to Auburn, I think it was out of Selma, would have been a great get for Butch Thompson, and then the Orioles drafted him in the first round and offered him $3.5 million. Well, he skipped Auburn, and he's now the number two prospect in the Orioles system and is looking at debuting sometime in probably August or September. So definitely takes a while to get these guys to the big leagues, and it's really hard to just look at who was drafted and say, this is obviously the best player, because there's so much more that goes into it than just talent.
And there's so many people drafted, too. There's so many draft picks in the MLB draft. I've just always found it interesting how the MLB draft really stands out, and it stands alone in the professional drafts, because when you're drafted, like I said, and like we've been talking about, your analogy was perfect. You said you can't just say, oh, we need a shortstop, let's go get one and just throw them on the field first game of next season. You may draft a shortstop, you may draft five of them, but they're going to have to work their way up, play through multiple levels until they get there, and then most of them don't even get there.
Yeah. The bust rate for just about every player when it comes to being drafted, like, it's over 50%. So
that's crazy.
So when I tell people, you know, like, if I'm given a projection on the show and I'm saying, yeah, this player's probably going to be this or be this, I always have to caveat, like, the most likely scenario is this guy doesn't make it. You know, assuming that he does make
it. If you're playing a numbers game, yeah.
If you're playing a numbers game, I mean, more than half of all prep pitchers that are drafted never play in the big leagues. You know, that is one of the riskiest profiles. And then there's so many guys playing similar positions. Think about where you put your best players in youth baseball. You put them at shortstop, you put them in center field, and you put them at pitcher. And so the four positions that are not exclusively, but the four most common positions drafted, shortstop, center field, pitcher, and catcher. And then typically what happens there is guys who can't hack it at shortstop get moved to second, or if they outgrow shortstop, they go to third. Guys who slow down too much to play center move to the corners. It's a lot of shifting and moving pieces. And so when you look at a team's minor league farm system, you may get to a single A or double A team, or single A or high A team, and they've got eight shortstops on the roster, and they're having to move guys. You play second base for a week, you'll play short for a week, you might play third for a week. And it's so hard. Roster construction is so much harder in the big leagues for baseball than any other sport, because there's so many variables in the draft, in free agency, and in positioning of guys and where you play them.
There's just a lot more thought process, a lot more prep, a lot more strategy in baseball drafting and development and just putting a roster together. It's just so crazy. It blows my mind how much they actually have to put into it, because you're not just managing one team. You're managing like four or five. You're managing tons of players. So the MLB draft coming up in a couple of weeks, you'll have all of that coverage on Locked On MLB Prospects. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We're going to talk about the MLB as it is right now. The power rankings came out. We're going to talk about the Atlanta Braves, too, on the other side of this break. You're listening to the Thursday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Wrapping up hour number one here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. Jacob Goins with you on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. We've got Lindsey Crosby, host of Locked On MLB Prospects and Auburn baseball writer for Auburn Daily, here in the studio. We've got you for another 5 or 6 minutes or so. Let's talk some MLB baseball, because let's be honest, right now, it's really the best sport that's going on is baseball right now. MLB teams are just winning games like crazy. The Braves are doing really well. And we got a lot to talk about with the MLB. You were telling me that some new World Series odds have come out. What does that look like, and why should Braves fans be excited?
Okay, so one, you said it's the only sport worth talking about right now. There's like five hockey fans out there who are really mad because their drafts tonight.
I do love hockey, but yeah, I'm going to be honest, I don't really keep up with the NHL draft. I'm going to be honest.
I don't either. Okay, so FanGraphs put out the World Series odds today, and first instinct, and your first instinct when we talked about it, was Yankees were going to be number one. Going backwards, Yankees are fifth, 11.7% chance of winning the World Series, according to FanGraphs. This is not just like the gambling odds. This is their formula that includes strength of schedule, you know, remaining opponents, all that kind of stuff. The Mets are fourth at 12.3%, which is interesting because the Braves are still behind, 2.5 games behind the Mets right now. Houston, so the Astros, at 14.5%, number one in the American League. Braves are tied for second best odds of winning the World Series right now, 14.5%, right behind, who else, the Dodgers at 15.4%. So second best odds from FanGraphs of winning the World Series is the Atlanta Braves, and I think part of it comes down to just the rotation stabilizing, especially the back half, and then the outfield stabilizing as well. So the addition of Michael Harris, the call-up of the young kid, 53 games in the high minors. Apparently that didn't matter. He was ready to go. And then inserting Spencer Strider, who pitches tonight as the Braves look for the sweep against the Cardinals.
He's been playing fantastic.
Quadzilla is fantastic. I love watching Spencer Strider. And it's something where, I mean, he's a fourth-round pick that was coming off of a Tommy John. And Atlanta said, we feel confident enough about what we saw scouting him before the injury. He's going to come back just fine from it. He did. Didn't pitch a ton of innings in college last year before they picked him, blew through the system all the way up where he made a cameo at the end of the season, and then this year went from the rotation, or sorry, from the bullpen to the rotation, has been great, and goes up against former prospect Matthew Liberatore, the Cardinals, tonight as the Braves try to sweep, and really just something where they've all of the weaknesses, for the most part, they've stabilized. Bringing up Michael Harris and moving Duvall back to a corner saved Duvall's legs. It's hard on a slugger to play center field every day and run around that much. And then Harris has held his own offensively, batting over 300, batting ninth. The only concern that I have, and I'm waiting for the trade deadline to see if they address this or not, is the Ozzie Albies being out until sometime mid to late August. A report came out just the other day that he's still on the mobility scooter, still can't put weight on his foot. And so I'm concerned the timeline's going to stretch into September, and he won't have time to be ready before the playoffs. So there's an outside possibility, I think. The trade deadline is August 2nd. There's an outside possibility, if the Braves aren't happy with Orlando Arcia and Phil Gossel in splitting time at second, that they go out and try to find a second baseman on an expiring deal or a shortstop you can move to second, maybe a Jose Iglesias of the Rockies or somebody, just to fill that spot for the rest of the year and give you some veteran insurance when Albies is back for the playoffs.
Well, looking at the Braves over, you know, coming off of the 14-game win streak, that's what I've been looking at. Since they came off of that, I said, play consistent baseball, and honestly, I've been saying wait for the Mets to blow it because I feel like it happens every year. Not that it's going to this year, but I just what I've been saying. Wait for that to happen, even though the Mets are getting back two of the best pitchers in baseball any day now.
Yeah, Max Scherzer's in line. He started just the other day through, I want to say he struck out maybe eight guys in four innings. Looked fantastic. They've actually adjusted the schedule. We were supposed to get a phenomenal pitching matchup on Sunday. Sandy Alcantara of the Marlins, the National League Cy Young favorite, versus Max Scherzer. They pushed Scherzer's start back a day, so he starts against Atlanta next Monday. Of course. Works out well for Atlanta there. But they have him. There's a question about when they're going to see Jacob deGrom. He just did a minor league rehab start. Feel really bad for those low-A hitters who are having to face Jacob freaking DeGrom.
Yeah.
My goodness.
Making, you know, poor salary and trying to make it to the big leagues, and you're having to go against DeGrom.
100-mile-an-hour fastball coming in. Like, you're like, dude, I was in high school a year ago.
Yeah, no thanks.
You know, it's not really fair to them. But the thing that I'm worried about is I don't know if we can count on the Mets just Metsing it up.
Yeah.
Because Buck Showalter is a different type of manager.
Right.
He's had a veteran stabilizing influence on this team. And, I mean, I really respect, he knows a lot about the game. He's seen just about every situation. And he has this team prepared for every eventuality and what's going to happen, and I just am not as confident that they'll collapse like they usually do. And so the Braves have to continue to go out there. You're only 2.5 games back right now, so continue to go out there, make it a goal to win every series, and then maybe a little extra focus whenever you play the Mets, because any victory there counts double.
You're exactly right. Look, the Braves have played consistent. That's what I've said. Coming out of that win streak, you don't have to win. You don't have to go on another 14-game win streak. Just play consistent. Avoid the losing streaks. You've made up some ground. Compete with the Mets and see what happens down the stretch. I think it's going to be an exciting finish. We still have a long way to go, but should be an exciting finish for the baseball season. Lindsey Crosby, host of Locked On MLB Prospects and Auburn baseball writer for Auburn Daily. We've got about 45 seconds or so. Let everybody know where they can find everything you're doing, because it's a busy time for you, my friend.
Absolutely is. I'm on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. My show, Locked On MLB Prospects, is available wherever you get your podcasts. And go out on YouTube. We are so close to 1,000 subscribers. Make sure you subscribe to the channel. We're going to be going live on the 17th that night for day one of the MLB draft, recapping that. And then we'll have everything going all the way through the trade deadline. You can catch all the Auburn baseball scouting reports and a draft recap at auburndaily.com.
Lots of stuff going on. It's a busy time for baseball as we are here on July 7th. Lots going on with Auburn baseball players still playing some games, trying to get drafted. Of course, a lot of MLB stuff going on with prospects and, of course, the Atlanta Braves. The goal is to have you in as much as we can over the summer, talking more baseball and more Braves. Because, look, Braves are trying to repeat. We'll see if they can do it. Long way to go, but it's exciting to be an Atlanta Braves fan. That's it for hour number one here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. Stay tuned. Hour number two coming up.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goertz.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, here on the Thursday edition of On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. Hope you're doing well on this Thursday afternoon. Hour number one was a good one. If you missed any of it, make sure you go and find the podcast wherever you get your podcast. Just search On the Line. Hour number one's in the books. You know what that means. Hour number two, officially underway here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Again, if you missed any of hour number one, make sure you go and find the podcast. Just search On the Line wherever you get your podcast. Lots of talk about the realignment stuff. We have quote-unquote news about that. We'll get into that in just a second. Also, we had Lindsey Crosby, host of Locked On MLB Prospects and Auburn baseball writer, that is, for Auburn Daily, here in the studio for the second part of hour number one. So if you missed any of that, we talked a lot about MLB prospects. We talked about some Auburn baseball players that are getting ready to hopefully be drafted in the MLB draft. We talked some MLB and Atlanta Braves. So good stuff from Lindsey Crosby, host of Locked On MLB Prospects. He was in studio here in It was the second part of hour number one. So big thank you to him for coming in. Make sure you go and find his podcast wherever you get your podcast and on YouTube. Big thank you to Lindsey Crosby. Phone lines are open here in hour number two. Give me a call. Anything on your mind in the sports world, anything I'm talking about that you want to jump in on, be a part of the show, I'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. That number again, 334-321-1390. That's the number to put you through to me. You can call in, be a part of the show. You can be on the line here with me, 334-321-1390. Well, we'll start hour number two, like we always do, with making headlines. The biggest one, we are 58 days away from the Auburn football season, 58 days away until September 3rd, when Auburn will kick off the 2022 college football season. And to get making headlines underway here on Thursday, July 7th, 2022, the headline today that broke about an hour before I went live, it broke earlier kind of, but it's been weird, okay? I say news and I say broke, and that's all in quotation marks, but according to Braden Keith, he is the co-founder and editor-in-chief for SwimSwamNews.com. I've never heard of that. I've never heard of him. No offense to them. I just never heard of it. So take that as you will. But he tweeted out this morning, and he posted an article, and it's still there. He's still backing it up. He says, from a source, North Carolina, Florida State, Clemson, and Virginia are all negotiating to join the SEC. ESPN is trying to void their TV deal with the ACC. That was the tweet earlier today from Braden Keith, the co-founder and editor-in-chief of the SwimSwamNews.com. Look, I don't know if it's true or not, but we're going to talk about it because if it is true, it's big news. Maybe he's just trying to get some clicks. Very well could be. Not too sure, but it's still up there. The article's still there. You can go and find it. And as of right now, he's the only one reporting it. They are the only ones reporting it. So I'm going to say at this point, no, it's probably not true. And I don't say that because of credibility or lack thereof. Until pen is put to paper and this has become officially official with an announcement from the schools and from the conferences themselves, I'm not going to believe it, right? I talked about it in hour number one, and I think this is very important. Remember when we found out about the UCLA and USC news, them leaving the Pac-12 and moving to the Big Ten? Yeah, it happened that day. That's the day we found out, was the day that it happened. And when the news broke, it was about 90% complete. And then earlier that evening, or later that evening, excuse me, it was finalized. It was signed, voted, whatever, and it was finalized. It was a done deal. And it happened all in the same day. I think if any type of move is to happen in the next few days, weeks, months, years, whatever it may be, I think we are not going to find out until right up to where it actually happens. And I think that's the best way to look at it, but this does give us a little talking point. We covered a lot of this back in hour number one, so if you missed any of that, make sure you go and find the podcast. Talked a lot about the what-if scenario. What if this is true? What if this actually happens and North Carolina, Virginia, Florida State, and Clemson do come to the SEC? We talked a lot about that back in hour number one. It's being reported by one person and one site. We'll see if it's true, but regardless, it gives us something to talk about. It's fun to think about it. There's advantages and disadvantages to those four schools coming to the SEC. You look at it from the football side, Clemson and Florida State, North Carolina at times would all benefit the SEC. You look at it from a basketball perspective, you've got North Carolina and Virginia and sometimes Florida State that will benefit you greatly, not to mention any of the other sports that go on in college athletics. We're going to see if this is true. We're going to see if this happens. But I think it's exciting if Clemson, Florida State, North Carolina, and Virginia were to join the SEC. I would be happy with that. I would. I would be happy with that scenario if those are the four teams that the Southeastern Conference said, yeah, we want these four to join our conference, and it becomes official. I'll be excited about it. I want to hear from you, though. What do you think? Do you like those teams? Do you want them in the SEC? Would you rather it be somebody else? I'd love to hear from you, 334-321-1390. Moving on in making headlines, tonight Jabari Smith will begin his NBA Summer League debut. He'll have his NBA Summer League debut, and guess who he's playing against? You guessed it. The Orlando Magic will be taking on the Houston Rockets in the NBA Summer League tonight, and just as I said with Chet Holmgren when everybody was flipping out about his fantastic game in the Summer League the other night, if Jabari goes off for 50 points tonight, that's fantastic. But it's still the NBA Summer League. He's still playing against talent. He's playing against people that he will be better than. He should do halfway decent tonight, and he should do decent and probably good in this NBA Summer League. It's not necessarily to see how good you are. The NBA Summer League is to get the new guys on the floor with some type of NBA talent before the very first game. They get to work out. People get to watch them. You get to see some guys who are trying to make a name for themselves, trying to get into the league, trying to get on a roster somewhere that are playing in the NBA Summer League. But Jabari Smith will play tonight his first game in the NBA Summer League with the Houston Rockets. And that will be against the Orlando Magic. That's tonight. Not sure if you can actually watch it on TV. I haven't looked it up. Maybe on like NBA TV or something like that. I'm sure you can live stream it somewhere, but that will be tonight. Jabari Smith will make his NBA Summer League debut. Moving on and making headlines, yesterday the Braves, they beat the Cardinals 3-0. They play again tonight looking for the sweep. And when you look at the Braves, we were talking about it with Lindsey Crosby back in hour number one. They're playing good baseball. They're playing consistent. They're doing what they have to do. And as I've been talking about, the Braves coming out of that 14-game win streak, they've done what they needed to do, just play consistent baseball and win games. Avoid the losing streaks. Make up ground on the Mets the best that you can because they have been playing good. And the Mets are good, and they will continue to get better if they get their two best pitchers back. But the Braves have done exactly what they need to do. They're going for the sweep against St. Louis tonight at 6:20. After that, they take on Washington at home and then the Mets at home. And then they play Washington again. So those two Washington series, you look at those, and the Nationals are not a very good baseball team right now, folks. The Mets obviously are. That's a huge series for the Braves. There's some winnable games against Washington. Try to take, you know, it's a three-game series against the Mets. Don't get swept. Try to win the series. You're at home. How big would that be for the Braves to just continue to roll through this month of July? We'll see how it goes. The Braves win last night 3-0 against the Cardinals. They go for the sweep tonight against St. Louis, 6:20. That is tonight for the sweep for the Atlanta Braves. Zach Blackerby just sent me a text about the NBA Summer League game. He said it's on ESPN, so there you go. If you're looking for something to watch tonight, you can watch Jabari Smith tonight on ESPN in his NBA Summer League debut. Moving on and making headlines, sticking with baseball, the MLB power rankings have come out for the current state of the MLB. The Braves are 5, and we talked to Lindsey Crosby back in hour number one, and he said that the updated betting odds for in the World Series odds, the Braves are 2nd in the World Series odds to win it all, and right now in the power rankings, they are 5th in those power rankings, which is pretty good for the Braves because, again, coming out of that 14-game win streak, they've been playing solid baseball, but there's some really, really good teams right now in the majors. You talk about the New York Yankees who can't seem to lose, and all they do is hit long, long bombs, and they just continue to win games. You have other teams like the Dodgers and the Mets who are just playing out of their minds, and it's a race to just get the most wins, right? You're looking for who's going to get to 60 wins first, who's going to get to 70 wins first. All of that is on the table. But looking at the power rankings, it's the Yankees in first, the Houston Astros at 2nd, the Dodgers 3rd, the Mets are 4th, and the Braves are 5th. So you look at the teams that the Braves have to go up against, the Mets in their own division. You play the Dodgers. We know how that rivalry goes with the Braves and the Dodgers. And then on the other side in the American League, you have the Yankees and the Astros. Really, really good baseball teams. You have the Yankees with 59-23. They are looking to be the first team to 60 wins. The Astros 53-28. The Dodgers 52-29. The Mets 51-31. And the Braves 49-34. I think it's anybody's race right now. I think there's a huge separation between the top and everybody else. But when you look at it from the Braves, again, I've said it a lot and I will continue to say it. You played well up to this point. You got on a big win streak to close the gap between you and the Mets. Don't mess it up. Just avoid the big losing streaks and you're going to be just fine. Continue to play. Lindsey was telling us how some of the weaknesses on this Braves roster, they have started to balance out a little bit. And I think you will start seeing even more consistent play and maybe even go on another win streak for the Braves. He's not as confident as I am in the Mets doing the Mets thing and blowing their lead in the division, but we will see how that goes. The Atlanta Braves going for the sweep tonight. They are 5th in the updated MLB power rankings. Moving on and making headlines, this isn't today's headlines, but in case you have missed it, Auburn football has added 2 recruits to the 2023 recruiting class. You have Cobb, the running back, and then Carmelo. I love that first name. Carmelo English, the wide receiver for Auburn. They committed over the long weekend, 2 4 stars with the possibility of being 5 stars. And look, you get a great wide receiver to the room. It's a position that Auburn football fans have been worried about. It's a position group that has been a big question mark over the last couple of years. Not saying that talent hasn't come through there, but consistent talent and consistent play at the wide receiver position has been something of concern for Auburn fans. And so with only four commits, it's easy to say, well, where is everybody else in this 2023 class for Auburn? I get that. But when you look at the players that are there and you look at the players that Auburn is going after, good things are happening on the recruiting trail for Auburn football. It's big that you get a big-time receiver like this for Auburn. And then, of course, the running back. He's just an Auburn-style back, man. He looks like an Auburn back. He's the style and the type that Auburn has always had. A little bit of physicality, a lot of speed and agility, and then he just looks like that Auburn running back. You can watch the film of him, and you just know he's going to fit into this system. I'm excited for them to get here. I'm excited for them to get some playing time in the years to come. I think both of these guys are starters down the road. I really do. Auburn has four guys in the 2023 class. Expect them to get more later on down the road, but you got to win some games first. Moving on in making headlines, it's a different one, but it's really interesting. The World Games begin tonight in Birmingham, up in Birmingham here in Alabama. I think that's super cool. The World Games will be in Birmingham. They start tonight, and this has been known for a while, but it gets underway tonight. What a cool experience for Birmingham and the city and the citizens of Birmingham and everybody that lives up in that area. My parents live up there. I went to my freshman year up there, all that good stuff. And it's so cool to have the World Games up there. I wish I was able to make it up there and see some of the events for the World Games that are going to be happening. But what a great opportunity for the city and for the businesses in Birmingham and for all of these, you know, people and athletes to be there right here in the state of Alabama to have the 2022 World Games. There's a lot that goes into those events. I mean, the World Games are no joke, folks, and a lot will be going on. I'll be keeping up with it the best I can. Like I said, I wish that I had the opportunity to go up there and see some of the events and, you know, get away from work and everything else going on right now to go up and see the World Games. But if you have the opportunity, do it. I mean, this is literally, I would put this on once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to be able to go to the World Games, because it's not only in the United States, it's in Birmingham, Alabama, 2.5 hours, or really 2 hours north of here. You know, just go and shoot up 280, go to Birmingham, watch the World Games. That is starting tonight in Birmingham. Well, that's it for making headlines here on Thursday, July 7th, 2022. Remember, 58 days away from the college football season when Auburn will kick off the SEC. There's a few teams that will kick off before then. Vanderbilt plays like a week before everybody. A couple of other teams play a few nights before. But 58 days away from Auburn football in Jordan-Hare Stadium on September 3rd. Get excited. It's a great time to be an Auburn Tiger. I'm telling you, good things are happening. You're 58 days from the kickoff. The countdown to 50 is on. You have SEC Media Days coming up in a couple of weeks. After that, it will fly by. August will come. Fall practice and fall camps will start. The QB battle will heat up. Those conversations will get going. So much to talk about in the next 2 months before college football gets underway. I'm excited. I know you are as well. And again, that's it for making headlines here in this segment. Off and running here in hour number two on the Thursday edition of On the Line. When we come back, question of the day. I proposed it in hour number one. Here it is again. Will Auburn football and Auburn in general, will they benefit or be hurt by the teams added to the SEC? No matter who it is, will Auburn football benefit or struggle if and when more teams are added to the SEC? Give me a call. I'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. Stay tuned. More of On the Line on the other side of this break.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Back here on the Thursday edition of On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. Jacob Goins with you on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Question of the day. Will Auburn football and then Auburn in general, Auburn athletics, you could say, will Auburn benefit or struggle if and when more teams are added to the SEC? That is the question of the day. Give me a call, 334-321-1390. I think it just depends. ultimately, my go-to gut answer is Auburn will struggle with if more teams are added to the SEC. And that's because more teams means more competition. And when you look at the SEC right now, we'll just talk about football for a second, then we'll go to basketball, obviously the two biggest ones. When you look at it from the football perspective, it's the best conference in the entire country, right? You have teams like Alabama and Georgia that not only compete for national championships every year, they win national championships every year. You look at Auburn's football schedule, and it's the hardest in the country just about every year. It is top five every single year. Most of the time, it's the top hardest schedule in college football. Look at it this year. It is. It's the hardest schedule in college football. And we look at it and say, you know, it's actually not that bad. But you have to go to Alabama and Georgia. That's what makes it the toughest schedule in football. But if you start talking about adding more teams to the SEC, not only are you adding more competition, you're adding more games in general, which means longer seasons, tougher seasons, which means it's going to be tougher for Auburn to climb out of the hole that the program is in right now. Do you remember in 2020, the COVID season, when it was just SEC games? That was a tough year. And at the end of it, everybody was banged up because the SEC is so good, so tough, so physical that at the end of an all-SEC year, teams were banged up and wore out because they had to play all-SEC teams and they had to play so many of them. Well, that's going to be the scenario and that's going to be the situation if more teams continue to come to the conference. Same thing with the Big Ten. You're going to have to play more conference games, which is more competition, more physical, you know, endurance on your body, physical toll on your body, and that has a lasting effect. Now, everybody will be in the same situation, so, you know, you can't complain about that too much. But when you look at it from Auburn's perspective, more competition is just brutal for Auburn. You already compete with Alabama, Georgia, LSU, the rest of the SEC. Then you add Texas and Oklahoma, who are, I would say, competitors in a conference, right? I would put them at high-level competitors in whatever conference they're in for football. And then you want to start talking about adding possibly teams like Clemson and Florida State to your football schedule? It's already the hardest in the country, folks. Then you add Texas and Oklahoma. That doesn't make it any easier. And then you add somebody like a Clemson or a Florida State. That doesn't make it any easier. Adding Virginia might. Adding North Carolina might. But it's not like you're adding another Vanderbilt to the schedule. You're not adding a bottom-tier program, a bottom feeder in a conference to the schedule. You're adding top-tier talent and the best of the best from the best conferences around college football, and you're adding that to Auburn's schedule. And so for a program that is trying to find itself and has already been on the back burner of this conference in college football, adding more teams won't make this journey any easier. You think Auburn's recruiting is struggling right now? Wait for more teams to be a part of the SEC. You think Auburn is struggling to win games right now? Wait until they have to play more conference teams, tougher conference teams every single year. It's not getting any easier for Auburn, folks. And so, like I said back in hour number one, you've got to figure this thing out. If you're Brian Harsin in Auburn, you better figure it out and figure it out fast. Because from this point on, in July of 2022, it's not getting any easier for you. The hill just got a little bit steeper for Brian Harsin and Auburn. You got to figure it out. And yeah, you feel bad, but it's what they signed up to do. But Auburn's not the only one. Every other team is having some sort of issue like this. They're having to deal with more teams coming to the SEC. But for somebody in a program like Auburn who is having a down couple of years and trying to rebuild a program from scratch, basically, is what Brian Harsin's trying to do. That's a tall task, doing it in this time with more teams coming to the SEC. Of course, Texas, Oklahoma, I think there will be more down the road. Looking at it from the basketball perspective, will Auburn benefit or struggle from more teams being added to the SEC? I don't think it's going to impact it a whole lot. I think Auburn basketball is in a great spot right now. And I think Auburn basketball is in a place, not just in the Southeastern Conference, but in college basketball in general, where it doesn't matter who they play. I think Auburn's going to be winning some games. And Auburn's going to compete for conference championships. And eventually, in the coming years, will be competing legitimately for national championships. Not just making NCAA tournaments, but making runs in the NCAA tournament. Putting pressure and making Final Fours. Competing for national championships. So, on the basketball side, I think it's great for Auburn. Because the SEC, while they're not the best conference in college basketball, they're pretty close. They're pretty close. And you add Texas and Oklahoma, yeah, it's decent. But if you start adding some of these ACC schools like we've been talking about, if you add North Carolina and Virginia or teams like that, that's only going to benefit Auburn. Yeah, it's going to be tough having to play those types of teams year in and year out, but how cool is that? To get to play North Carolina and Virginia, if that is what happens. I'm not saying that's already happened. I don't want that to come across that way. If that were to happen, imagine Auburn basketball getting to go to Chapel Hill and play North Carolina. How cool would that be? And that's going to make Auburn better as a program basketball-wise. And there's a difference between the football program and the basketball program right now, folks. That's obvious. The football program is trying to rebuild and get back to national relevancy. The basketball program's already there. And so playing better teams and better programs for Auburn in basketball right now makes them better. It makes the players better, the team better, and the coaches better, which ultimately leads to better postseason success. So when the team and the program are already good, adding good teams to the schedule doesn't affect it a whole lot. Yeah, you may have a couple more losses, but your team's going to be better because of it. When your program and your team is not that good, that makes it a whole lot tougher to crawl out of that hole that you're in. So for basketball, basketball is going to be just fine. They're going to benefit from more teams in the conference. Football? Not so much. Hey, we got 30 more minutes here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. Stay tuned. We're going to talk to Chris Gordy, host of Locked On SEC, after this.
With Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 more minutes left in the Thursday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Jacob Goetz with you here, welcoming in Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast. Chris, there's a lot going on. Let's jump right into it. The quote-unquote news today that there's some ACC teams that are possibly negotiating their way to the SEC. It's only been reported by one person and one site. Don't want to say that it's not legit, but there's only one person reporting it. But it makes for good conversation, so I wanted to get your take on this. There's a report that North Carolina, Virginia, Florida State, and Clemson are trying to negotiate their way to the SEC. What do you make of it?
Yeah, I mean, my initial reaction to it was, consider the source. And I say that with full, no means to disrespect the guy who tweeted that out. I know he's got a blue check mark, but, you know, it's the first time I've ever heard of Swam Sports or whatever the website is.
Yeah, me too, man.
I saw Dennis Dodd commented and said, kind of the same thing, consider the source. And look, it's not to say people don't get things, from their research and all that and, get information. They put it out there, but unless it's coming from Ross Dellinger at Sports Illustrated or, just like some of the big names like Dennis Dodd, like the guys who've been all over conference realignment, all that kind of stuff from the very beginning, I take it with a grain of salt. I mean, my buddy Brent Swerneman from the Houston Chronicle last year, he was the one to put out there the week of SEC Media Days that, he got it on good authority that Texas and Oklahoma were coming to the SEC. And again, like even him putting it out there, he's a guy from a reputable news source with a blue check mark. And I was like, yeah, I still kind of want to see somebody else back this up. That's kind of where we are in the day and age where Twitter and anybody with a Twitter account can put news out there. So anyway, I say all that to say, if it is true, if the report is true, it's interesting. Virginia over Virginia Tech, I think the big thing that we have to start considering here when we talk about, you know, adding teams to conferences is there's twofold. One, it's market and state, you know, like market size. What city are you adding? And you know, is it a state that you don't already have? And two, what does the team bring wise? Forget basketball, forget baseball, forget all these other sports. And by the way, Virginia, very good baseball school, very good basketball school, not such a good football school. So at least in the last 20 years or so. So to me, that one doesn't make sense. At least Virginia Tech has a much more storied tradition of football success. And, you know, again, it would seem a little bit better fit, I guess, in the SEC. But, you know, that's the thing. I've seen some people putting out there, well, what about Duke? You got to have Duke. I'm sorry. Duke basketball is great. Duke football, not so great. And, again, like when we talk about profit, stuff that's profitable, basketball is largely a revenue-losing sport. You lose money on basketball across the majority of schools in this country. Football generates revenue. Even Rutgers gets into the, you know, the positives with money from football revenue. So it's football is the straw that stirs the drink. So I'm a little I was a little taken aback when I saw Virginia in there. But, you know, the other ones, I mean, I would think Clemson is the first one you start with if you're the SEC. Obviously, you know, they have been the best football school in the ACC the last decade. They make a lot of sense. If you want to go tradition, Miami and Florida State make a lot of sense. So those are the schools I'd be starting with before I start talking about Virginia. But again, if it's all about getting into a state you're not in, well, Virginia or Virginia Tech does that.
Speaking with Chris Gordy, host of Locked On SEC podcast, not speaking on these four teams specifically in that one report, but just in general, if the SEC does decide to go and add more teams to the conference, in your opinion, what would the reaction be of the current teams and schools in the SEC if they do add some more?
Yeah, I mean, the road gets tougher. I mean, that's what I think people don't realize. I think a lot of us are being armchair quarterbacks sitting on our couch going, yeah, get this school and this school. Well, you know, we already have the best conference. It'll be even better. You know, I have a friend who's an LSU fan who was saying yesterday, you know, I'm sick of us playing Louisiana Monroe and Troy and, you know, these non-conference games. Give me some big dogs. Give me Florida State. Give me Miami and all that. And my reaction to that is, dude, you realize you're making your schedule that much tougher. You're going from, you know, what could have been a 10-2, 9-3 type season to suddenly you're talking more 7-5 because you've just made your schedule that much tougher. It's so funny. You know, fans always want the big opponent. Yeah, we want to play Ohio State in Auburn. Yeah, and then when you lose that game, you're going back and going, hey, maybe it would have been better to play Troy. You know, like that's where we are. Like we want the sexy matchups. But what do you do when you lose the sexy matchups? What do you do when you start losing and that coach that, you know, you were all excited about hiring is suddenly, you know, 500 coach 2 years in? Well, you start talking buyout. You start talking, we got to fire this guy. Who else can we get? And it's just this weird, vicious cycle of, like, raised expectations, win at all costs. Yeah, you can have one down year, but you better not have two down years in a row. I mean, that's where we are with college football. So that's where I would say, you know, maybe pump the brakes on fan bases that are saying, yeah, let's go get this school and this school. No. If I'm the SEC, if I'm a fan of an SEC school right now, and keep in mind, we're already adding Texas and Oklahoma, who are two really good programs, I'd be looking at saying, yeah, let's go add Virginia. Let's go add, you know, maybe Wake Forest. Let's add some teams that we think can be W's on our schedule as opposed to some bigger powers that are going to make it a lot tougher to win.
I completely agree with you. I'm so glad you said that. I completely agree because I've been talking about Auburn, and when it comes to football, it's known that Auburn plays one of the toughest schedules every single year. And then if you got to add Clemson to that schedule, I'm sorry, I don't want to do that. I really don't. And so I think that would be the reaction for Auburn, and it should be the reaction of a lot of other SEC schools as well. Talking with Chris Gordy, host of Locked On SEC podcast. Chris, over the 4th of July weekend, I hope you had a great 4th of July yourself, but there was a ton of recruiting over this past weekend and past 10 days, really, just a ton of recruiting in the SEC of commitments, big-time names to big-time schools. Who were some of the highlights you had on your list?
Yeah, I like the wide receiver that Auburn picked up. I was watching a little film on him. Looks the part. I mean, looks like he could be – I mean, what's been – Auburn's big gripe this last year plus, it's been finding the go-to receiver or having one and being able to hold on to him and not leaving him the transfer portal. So I like that. You know, Alabama's made some nice additions. LSU, Brian Kelly finally woke up. They were kind of napping, I guess, when it came to recruiting. And all of a sudden, in like a handful of 4 days, Brian Kelly picks up like three defensive ends, a linebacker for the 2024 class. So finally starting to pick up for Brian Kelly and company. Shane Beamer just keeps adding four-star linebackers from the state of Florida. I don't know what's going on in South Carolina, but they're dipping into Florida. But to me, the bigger story just among, you know, Brian Kelly starting to pick up, but Billy Napier at Florida, man, they are losing recruiting battle after recruiting battle to Miami right now. And the big thing is because of NIL deals. You know, Texas, I don't know if you saw this, after the Arch Manning commitment, Texas mm-hmm. has picked up 10 commitments since the Arch Manning commitment. Kids out of Louisiana and across the state of Texas. I mean, they are going everywhere and anywhere, and these kids are, we're calling it Arch Madness. Every kid is following Arch Manning to Texas. And it's kind of funny because Steve Sarkisian may stink again this year. What if he goes 6-6 or 7-5? I don't think the fans can do anything. They can't fire him because you got Arch Manning. You got to hold on to Sark to keep that Arch Manning commitment. Mm-hmm. So that's just an interesting one just in terms of the effect it's having on the SEC. But, man, A&M continues to kill it. You know, like I said, Alabama's picking it up. Georgia's doing well. But Florida's really lacking, like I said, losing out to Mario Cristobal, who hasn't even coached a game yet at Miami. I keep asking, I'm like, what are they selling at Miami? And you go, oh, I get it. It's NIL deals. Because, you know, Miami's been largely a nothing the last handful of years in college football. So, again, that's just kind of my takeaways on what's going on. You know, Eli Drinkwitz has been kind of slow at Vanderbilt, I mean, at Missouri, getting some kids in. So, be really curious to see how these next couple weeks play out because, man, a lot of the big names are already off the board. And, you know, you start looking at that December signing date, you know, it's now's the time to do your damage and get the bulk of your kids into your class sign.
And, Chris, when you talk about Florida losing out to recruiting battles to Miami because of NIL, that's definitely the reason. What do the Gators and that program have to do to try to get some players to come and play there?
Oh, I got to open up the checkbook. I mean, that's what I love. I don't know if you saw comments. Mark Stoops talked with the media this morning at Kentucky, and he kind of hinted at it. I mean, Mitch Barnhart, their athletic director, he's been a great AD in his time there. John Calipari, what he's done on the basketball court, granted, you wish he had one or two more championships in there, but every year he's got them in the tournament and going on deep runs. But the football program's been a little slow to come around on NIL, and, you know, that's where I look at with Kentucky is Mark Stoops comes out today and basically says, hey, we know what this is. You know, like, we know what the deal is. We got to start putting our money where our mouth is and start paying for some players. So thought that was kind of interesting from Mark Stoops coming out of Kentucky. But, yeah, I mean, and this will be an interesting storyline at SEC Media Days because I kind of want to ask Jimbo Fisher this. I know he's going to get very defensive because he's been all about, we don't pay players. We bring kids here because they want to play for A&M and they like our program. It's like, yeah, okay, that's fine. But, like, so the rule says you can't use NILs as an inducement for recruiting. But there was a viral video that came out last week of a tour guide, presumably an assistant coach, giving a tour of A&M and says, hey, you see those suites up there? You know, plenty of boosters there that'll, you know, pay you money with NIL deals if you come to play here. And so it's a weird thing because, like, if that kid, like, the fact is, if that kid chooses to pick A&M, A&M has plenty of big money people who support their program that are willing to legally invest it into an NIL deal and give it to the kid. That's a fact. The problem is the rule says you can't use it as an inducement. So you have to act stupid and dumb and like, oh, what money? I have no idea what you're talking about until the kid is on campus. And then suddenly, yeah, he's got an NIL deal. He's got an NIL deal. Like, that's the weird part about this. It's like, we have to keep our nose in the sand and act like we don't know anything until they're on campus and go, yeah, they got an NIL deal, completely legal. So that's where I wonder where this thing is going to go, because it's really silly if it really is about you can't use NIL as an inducement. Everybody's doing it. Jimbo's doing it. Cristobal's doing it at Miami. And the ones who aren't doing it are the ones that are losing in recruiting right now.
Well, I mean, at this point, you would be stupid not to do it because everybody else is doing it. And the ones that are getting all of the big-time recruits. Chris, how did it get to this point? Because obviously NIL was brought up and was created, and it was a good idea But, of course, the NCAA just said, yeah, here you go, and it went from what it should have been to what it is now. How did that happen, and is there a way to fix it?
Yeah, I mean, there were no parameters set up. I mean, it should have been, the rule should have been, first up, two-phase. First up, if any kid wants to create his own clothing line, his own business, his own website, he has more power to do that, and all the profits can go right into his bank account from that website. So, obviously, that kid would get with somebody who could set it up, run the business, run it and all that, and that's the first part. The second one is, man, you want to sign any marketing opportunities? If Big Jim's car dealer wants to give you a truck and put your face on the billboards and all that, you're more, you can absolutely do that and take it from there. But there needed to be a stipulation in there about, what we have, these things that are called collectives that have been created, where basically it's like booster clubs or, alumni groups that fund the program already. The people who write the check to get the new library and all the stuff like that. Like, all they're doing is just funneling that money now towards a pool that's going towards the players. And, again, that's fine. Like, you want to do that with the current players, it's fine. But, again, I don't know how you control it to say you can't do it for the 17-year-olds coming out of high school to choose your school. You know what I mean? Like, that's where there needs to be some more kind of regulation or stipulation. But then again, part of me says, you know what, if these morons with all their billions of dollars want to write checks to 17-year-olds who may or may not pan out, let them. When that kid doesn't pan out or ends up transferring after a year, it's their money that they wasted. That kid got a little money in his pocket. So, again, like, it all goes back to the NCAA not setting up rules and regulations, not having oversight and getting ahead of this thing. And that's a big reason why Mark Emmert has one foot out the door and the NCAA has no leadership, and basically, all the Power 5 conferences are about to crumble outside of the SEC and the Big Ten.
And you know what? We're not surprised at all that the NCAA dropped the ball on this either. Speaking with Chris Gordy, host of Locked On SEC podcast, before I let you get out of here, Auburn football, you talked about the wide receiver commit. They also picked up the running back commit in this 2023 class. But Auburn fans are still worried because there's only four guys committed in this 2023 class. Do you have words of positivity that an affirmation for Auburn fans, or maybe not so much?
So I'm glad you mentioned this. On my show today, Locked On SEC, you can find it on YouTube or wherever you get your podcast. I had Colby Wooden on from Auburn.
Awesome. I saw that.
Kid. Yeah, awesome kid going into his third year on the on the field, and this is his money year. His redshirt junior year, he had 4 sacks 2 years ago, 5 last year. If he takes that step forward, gets 8-9 sacks this year, he's going to leave after this year. He's going to go to the draft. He's going to go high, and he's going to go be an NFL player. What that kid says about how much he loves Brian Harsin, how much he likes his coaching staff, how much he really likes Jeff Schmetting, like, I think it's the proof is in the pudding, and we're not going to see it until Auburn hits the football field. But once they do, and they start to win some games, and they're better than a lot of people are projecting them to be this year, that's when I think you're going to start to see a lot of kids come into the class. I think right now there's hesitancy. I think there's hesitancy because people are worried. All the offseason talk about Harsin and, are they going to fire him? Losing all the assistant coaches, kids hitting the transfer portal, like all those concerns, I feel like at least from the up close with the program have been settled right now. But on the outside looking in, how do the recruits and all those kids perceive it? That's where you're not going to see it until they start proving it on the field. So once Auburn gets on the field, they get a couple wins under their belt, I think that'll settle the nerves of some of the undecided recruits out there to say, okay, it looks like there is some stability here. It looks like Harsin's back on anywhere, and they'll start committing. And then again, on the flip side, if they start losing games and they start the season 1-3, you're not going to get those recruits, and the boo birds are going to get louder, and Harsin will be gone next year.
Well, Chris, good stuff as always. Maybe that helps Auburn fans feel a little bit better about this recruiting class in 2023. Always good talking to Chris Gordy, host of Locked On SEC podcast. Let everybody know where they can keep up with you and everything you're doing.
Yeah, just search Locked On SEC. LockedOnSEC.com is the quickest way to the podcast. Or just go to YouTube, search Locked On SEC. You'll see our interview there with Colby Wooden. And some really interesting stuff. You don't want to miss his thoughts on his reaction after the Alabama game. He revealed something pretty interesting to us, so go check it out.
Well, great teaser. Chris, I'll talk to you next week. It's always good having you on.
All right, thanks, man.
That was Chris Gordy, host of Locked On SEC Podcast, here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. Let's take our final break. We'll come back and wrap it up with Final Take here on ESPN 106.7. Auburn Opelika Sports Leader.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Wrapping up the Thursday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Jacob Goins with you here for the next couple of minutes. Big thank you to Chris Gordy, host of Locked On SEC Podcast, coming on Thursday at 3:30 like he always does. A big thank you to him. Always a great interview. He's always got great stuff. And look, I'm just glad that he holds himself back and doesn't really get into it in his answers. I'm really glad he does that. But always great talking to Chris Gordy, host of Locked On SEC. Also back in hour number one, big thank you to Lindsey Crosby, host of Locked On MLB Prospects and Auburn baseball writer for Auburn Daily. He was in the studio for the second half of hour number one, so big thank you to him as well. If you missed any of today's show, make sure you go and find the podcast. Just search On the Line wherever you get your podcast. After the show, I cut the commercials out, upload it there for you to listen. If you missed any of the show today or any of my other shows, make sure you go and find the podcast. Just search On the Line wherever you get your podcast. Final take for today is continuing on with this realignment talk of college football, college athletics in general. And again, the solo report today about possibly North Carolina, Florida State, Clemson, and Virginia trying to negotiate their way to the SEC. Nothing has been confirmed. Nothing else has been reported. And so, as of this moment, nothing has changed, right? We have the one singular report of the one guy. And you know what? He very well may have some information that is true. This absolutely could be true, right? But until we see more and get more information from other sources, you just got to be like, okay, yeah, maybe, right? Maybe this is true, and it's fun to kind of ponder on it and you know, hypothesize what could happen and kind of picture how this could look. But when it comes down to Auburn, look, for football, you don't want more teams in the SEC right now. Let's just be honest. We kind of talked about it with Chris Gordy, and if you're Auburn, football that is, you don't want to have Clemson and Florida State come to this conference. Same thing with a lot of other SEC schools. You do not want more teams here. It's hard as it is. The SEC is the best conference in all of college athletics already as it stands right now with 14 teams. It's going to get tougher when Texas and Oklahoma get here as early as 2024, which I think will happen because of how fast everything else is going down. Texas and Oklahoma will get here as soon as possible, which is 2024. It's only going to get tougher when they join. But why do we want it to get tougher with other teams? Chris had a great point. We all love to see the big sexy matchups with big-time Power 5 schools going at it. But like he said, what happens when you lose that game? Well, then you're frustrated. Then you're upset. You're like, man, we should have just played Mercer this weekend instead of trying to play Florida State at a neutral site, whatever it may be. I there's no doubt that I am one of the biggest, you know, the biggest pumpers of let's get rid of some of the cupcake games, right? You have three of them a year, and they get old. They get annoying. But a couple of the positives of those, besides the money that goes to those smaller programs, which I think is a fantastic idea because they get paid to show up and get beat. One of the other positives of playing those smaller schools like Alabama State, like Mercer, San Jose State, whoever it may be, that's a chance for a team like Auburn in the SEC where you play such tough games week in and week out. Those are opportunities for you to get healthy and to get re-energized and to get some wins under your belt. Build some confidence in your program and in your team. Look at this upcoming season for Auburn. You start with those two smaller schools before you play Penn State. And then after that, you don't look back. Yeah, sure, you play one way at the end of the season. But look at that game, too. That game is right before the Iron Bowl. So those games do have a purpose. And they do benefit your team and your program. They may be boring to watch somebody win 60-5 or 60-7, whatever it may be. But they do have a benefit. And Auburn needs those games on their schedule right now for football. Whether we want it or not, and whether we think that it's a good idea to get more teams to the SEC, I'm not too sure if Auburn wants more teams in the SEC right now. Now, when it gets to the level of basketball and you can beat anybody on any day or night, sure, football would love to have better competition and bigger games sometimes. There's no doubt. But as it stands right now, if you're Auburn football and if you're an Auburn fan like most of you are, you do not want Clemson and Florida State and any other big-time football program coming to the Southeastern Conference. You think it's tough now, and you think the program's struggling to rebuild right now, wait until you add those teams to the schedule. Bad news will come if that happens, I promise you. You think it's bad now, wait until those teams show up. That's it for the Thursday edition of On the Line. I'll be back tomorrow. Stay safe. I'll talk to you later.